Oh, I know you're not going to ask me what number.
You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 448. 4 plus 4 equals 8. Podcast. That was one of my weaker intros, but that's all right because we've got a strong lineup tonight. Adam White is not here because, Tom, Adam White said, I'm sure there's something more important that I could be doing. That actually worried me a little bit because, I mean, there's always something you can be doing. You know what I mean? Do you think Adam White's going to quit the podcast, Tom? Are we in danger of losing Adam White and his valuable insight?
I think at any given day you're in danger of losing an Adam White due to his various other interests, but ultimately I think he's a dog who will always come back around to eat his own shit. Or maybe vomit. Maybe vomit's a better term. But no, I think he would miss us if he left for too long. But
well, and then listen, we also have one of my favorite podcasters here with us today, Hallie Bullitt, who has been off on a little bit of a sojourn, but now she's back. Hallie Bullitt, how are you doing tonight? Are you feeling good? Are you ready to start whipping it up again? Back in action.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to, to talk about music, because I went and I had a baby, and I don't feel like I've had a lot of conversations about music in these last 2 months. So, yeah, I'm psyched to get back.
Well, listen. I thought you were going to say you're glad to have a conversation about dogs coming back to eat various things that they left on the ground. But
I'm
I guess music
would
be all right,
too.
Well, music would be all right, too.
Well, listen, everybody's charged. But both sides here are charged up and ready to go. Tom's gone kind of blue. Hallie's like, I'm bright. I'm ready. Let's rock it. So let's jump right into it. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. We've got a couple of interesting letters here. And we've got a joke. Guy Deadtooth sent us a joke, but we'll get to that in a second. Let's get to the regular letters first. This is from Jabroid. Here's what Jabroid says. I loved hearing about your summer vacations. I'm hoping to go to the Bash and to see Rancid. Why do you always say that you haven't seen a band if you have seen them at a festival? A fest is great because it's big, the sound is huge, and you're there having a good time with all of your friends. Club shows can be fun, but a fest is an all-day fun event. Why should you limit your good times to just the night? Hallie, on the last episode, the one before that, we talked about our vacations. I went to punk rock bowling. Tom went to punk rock camping.
I was just in I didn't. I went to Chicago, but that was all right.
And Adam
I camped in a hotel.
And Adam White went to Jamaica. And we've expressed this a couple of times on the podcast. Tom and Adam have expressed it. If you've seen a band at a festival, have you really seen them? And Jabroid is arguing that you have. Hallie, if you've seen a band at a festival, does that count as seeing them? Is it the same as the club experience? What's your stance on seeing a band at a festival? Awesome or lame?
I'm not going to say awesome or lame, but you're right. It's not the same. It's not the same. And I do think you have to qualify saying that you've seen them. I'm totally with you on that. And I didn't like even really think about that or realize that I felt that way until you said it. But like, yeah, it's not, if you've only seen a band at a festival, it's, you've seen them, but it's, I don't, you've seen them ish. Haven't seen them all the way. You've seen them ish.
A good example for me, John, I only ever got to see the Buzzcocks one time, and I'm sort of self-flagellating about that because I should have seen them more than that. But I saw them play at Riot Fest, middle of the day, outside, broad daylight for a half hour. So I officially did see the Buzzcocks, but it was pretty weak, you know? It's just not the same as seeing somebody at night, in the dark, drinking better beer with light show and seeing a full set and... I don't know. I mean, festivals are fine, and there's definitely plenty of people who really enjoy that, and I went to many of them for close to 30 years, but it's just not for me anymore.
Like I said, I went to punk rock bowling recently, and it was awesome, and you can listen to old podcasts here about that.
Yeah, that might be the exception to the rule.
That's true. I mean, honestly, not to blow punk rock bowling's trumpet, but it was the best music festival I've ever been to, and I think it's the best one by far, honestly. Like, water was only $2, which I think is very reasonable. And the bands were awesome. We'll see about next year. Let's hit our joke. This is from Guy Deadtooth, who sends us in jokes. So Guy Deadtooth says,
What's is this too blue? Is
no,
too
no,
blue?
It's not blue. It's a what's a dentist's favorite hardcore band?
Is it that Tartar Control, that Mormon like hardcore band that Ricky used to love?
Nope. Plaque Flag.
Each.
So there's a joke.
That
for
is
you.
A
I would
dad
have,
joke
I
slash pun.
I would have circled around to, if you'd given me 5 more seconds to think of it, I would have gotten that one.
my bad. I would have liked if you had known that one. Well, my bad. Listen, well, Guy Dead Dude keeps sending in your jokes. Oh, I realize that his joke is also like a tooth joke as well. Keep sending us jokes, and we'll keep reading them.
I love the dad jokes, man. I'm all for it.
This is from Alejandro in Mexico City, and here's what Alejandro says. Due to your incessant talk of Discogs, I decided to join Discogs to increase my week record collection. I only have 7 albums. I bought a cheap copy of Ramones' Leave Home, but it turned out to be counterfeit. This is all your fault. But then I realized the counterfeit might be more hard to find than the originals. Do you collect counterfeits? Do you like them? From Alejandro in Mexico City.
I have a thought on this, but I'm gonna probably step on your toes over the course of the evening, and I apologize in advance. I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna try to clear it, clear the space.
Are you talking to me, Tom, or Hallie?
No, I was talking to Hallie.
Oh.
I'm gonna let Hallie talk first, because I'm always...
No. So sorry. I didn't realize you were talking to me. Yeah, no, I don't feel like you're stepping on my toes. I don't have a strong opinion on this one. Go for it.
So I went... and saw one of the bands. I didn't go to summer camp. I actually went to Chicago and watched a couple shows. And the second night, we went and saw TSOL and the Boll Weevils. And... TSOL was selling Italian, and I was slow to even mention this because I don't know what the legal ramifications of it are, but they were actually selling Italian bootlegs of their Dance With Me album, and I bought one. It said Jack approved Italian bootlegs, and I know they're reissuing a proper version of it. So I'm not, if it sounds good and it looks good, I'm not necessarily... necessarily have a problem with it. I wouldn't go out of my way. I don't let, you know, I'd rather have the money go towards the proper artist, but since the artist was selling it in this case, I was pretty cool with it. And I, you know, I'm not like a guy who's into collecting all the pressings and all the colors and all that stuff. And also, if you only have 7 records, you could do a lot worse than one of them being Leave Home.
You know, Tom, you bring up a very interesting point, because TSOL does not own the rights to Dance With Me. They famously assigned it to Frontier Records, which happened to a lot of those.
Well, it's getting repressed now by somebody's repressing it. I'm not sure. It's getting a legitimate repress.
DINK in the UK is repressing it, but what I'm saying is, even so, well, I don't know about the UK, but in the US, that like Frontier might be repressing it, but Jack doesn't get any of that money because they don't have the rights to it. So, and of course, Italy is famous for its bootlegs. And so what he did
But John, if I may, I know Nitro, the last legitimate version of it was on Nitro.
True.
They reissued like the first 4 TSOL albums.
True, but that's licensed from Frontier Records. Frontier Records famously has pretty, I don't want to say oppressive, but wide-reaching contracts. All those early Frontier stuff. Circle Jerks, TSOL,
First Suicidal albums, Adolescence.
Great example. Why did Suicidal re-record their first album? Because they don't have the rights to the original version. Because
they wanted to make it slightly worse.
Yeah. So anyway, it's amusing that an artist is selling bootlegs of his own material because he doesn't actually own the rights to his own material, which is amusing. For me...
Well, like I said, I was slow to say anything because I don't want to... Last thing I wanted to get is my uncle... it was interesting, and it was a nice pressing, so I bought a heavy, you know, 180-gram... nice black vinyl pressing.
I find that amusing. I'm pretty much anti bootleg if the bootleg itself cuts into an official release. The most famous example is the Rudimentary Peni reissues. They were about 1/3 of the way through the reissue series, and an Italian label rushed out a whole bunch of cheap bootlegs. The officials were actually kind of expensive, about $35 to $40 each, but that's because they were imported and made in England, and they were exceptional job. I mean, they were exceptional pressings. But the Italian label rushed out a bunch of cheap bootlegs, and basically they killed the market for the official by releasing the bootleg. So I'm pretty much anti-bootleg. The only time I'm pro-bootleg is if something is in the hands of some entity that doesn't even know it owns it, And so if someone's going to press it, then you might as well press it so people can hear it. There's no point in paying $300 for a record when it doesn't need to be that way, you know. Or if it's quality material that for whatever reason, I mean, honestly, like I usually defer to the artist. So I say the artist has the ultimate decision. But once in a while, the bootleg guys are better at re-releasing stuff than the artists themselves. So in an event where the bootleg cuts into the artist's money, I'm completely against it. But in an event where those two things can kind of exist in tandem, either because the artist doesn't care, or the artist doesn't have the rights, or it's just, the catalog is just being neglected, I think a bootleg is okay. Let's see here. Go ahead.
I'm John. I've been waiting. I'm waiting and waiting and waiting for the Narmer Records reissue of 12 Hits for Hell. 12 Hits from Hell. I'm sorry. That's my ultimate goal. Let's just do it. We can find a pressing plant that'll be so oblivious we can do it. I'll help you with PR.
Well, there's the classic example. There's no reason not to release 12 Hits from Hell. It sounds fantastic, but Danzig just doesn't want to release it. So I'm glad there's a bootleg of it out there. I mean, it's the point of copyright, honestly, is to protect artists and basically to protect,
make sure they get paid,
and to protect the degradation of art and to support the art so it can exist. But in this scenario, copyright law is actually harming art because it's blocking it from being legitimately released. So I'm glad it's a bootleg of 12 Hits from Hell. Tom, I'm not going to release it because I don't want to get sued by Danzig and I don't want to have to fistfight Doyle.
Or beat up by Jerry Only.
Well, I don't know. Jerry Only is not in his peak right now, but Doyle is still amazingly in his peak.
John, there was a very long piece today in Metal Sucks. And I hate to pimp another website, but they had access to a lot of the legal documents about the Danzig reunion. If you get a chance, you should read it. It's very interesting stuff.
It
supports one of the things that you had said that you kind of knew about. So.
All right, we'll address it right now very briefly. So there's the rumor that there's only going to be 12 Misfits reunion shows because 12
10,
10 shows 10. Because it was part of the legal settlement between Danzig and Jerry Only. There was a document floating around for a while, but it didn't seem like it was drafted by an attorney. And sure enough, Metal Sucks, they pulled some court docket that had an unsigned settlement agreement that was different from the one that was floating around. But the quote, one that Metal Sucks pulled also said there's only going to be 10 Misfits reunion shows. But
6 to 10, yeah.
Until I pull the docket myself, I think they might have made a mistake, but I could be wrong. The reason being is it's extremely unusual in a lawsuit where two parties sue each other and then settle. It's extremely unusual to file the settlement agreement, even a draft of the settlement agreement, because that's usually confidential. Why would you want a settlement agreement to be publicly accessible for anybody that wants to see it? So I did see what Metal Sucks had, and it did have a court bait stamp on it, but I'm not sure I think that still might be I got to look into it, because I don't know why anybody, especially the Misfits when there's a lot of money on the table, would make their settlement agreement public record. Settlement agreements are almost always not public record, so that's weird. I don't know. Anyway, we talked about 12 Hits from Hell. 12 Hits from Hell is a famously unreleased Misfits album that has two guitars on it as opposed to one. It's got
easy to find online. I mean, it's not hard to find.
It's got Doyle on guitar, but also has Bobby Steele on guitar. Let's play Halloween from 12 Hits from Hell. It's a bootleg, but it's cool. And we'll be back.
My fire burning bright, hundred faces in the night. I remember Halloween, they got packed up full, till the dead are out in cold. I remember Halloween, finally let it go, where skeleton lies in the snow. I remember Halloween, this day that they go, gonna buy this hack from full. Thank you.
And we're back, and that was the Misfits doing Halloween from 12 Hits from Hell. That's a bootleg you should track down. I'm going to mention two things real quick, and then we will get into our news proper. Number one, this past weekend we had our Summer Chimera. The Summer Chimera was Stizza Crackback by Crazy in the Brains, Danbert Nobikin of Chumbawamba with Kierwood Kramer, and opening was Roadkiller. And I'll tell you, it was special. It was great. It was great. Dan Burt was amazing. I mean, he still sounds exactly like he did. He's got that proper English voice, you know. He did about half Chumbawamba tracks, old school anarcho-punk Chumbawamba tracks, and half new stuff. And it was fantastic. And we did Stizza Back by Crazy in the Brains. Last year we did Stizza Back by Crazy in the Brains with Joe Jack Talcum. And this year was super cool because they did an unusual set list. They opened with Stop the Insanity. They played Soon We'll Be Dead. And they just did a bunch of tracks that Leftover Crack usually doesn't do, which was awesome. And at the end, Danbert and Kira came up on stage with Stizza, and they did The Day the Nazi Died. And then everybody that played that night did a cover of Jim Carroll's People Who Died. And it was an amazing show. I threw balloons on the crowd. We had flyers. Between the bands, I played bands from the 80s that had one mega hit, but were actually rewarding and interesting bands in their own right that people didn't know about, such as Human League, Flock of Seagulls, maybe Go-Go's. I played that kind of stuff in reference to Chumbawamba, of course. And it was an awesome evening, though I don't think anybody knew what a chimera was. I thought everybody knew what a chimera was. I'm pretty sure no one knew what a chimera was, to tell you the truth.
I know what a chimera was. I know what it is, but I have to say that hearing you say it is probably the first time I knew how it was pronounced. It's like one of those words you like read and never actually say in conversation.
I'm not the only one who thought I had the ch sound instead of the k sound.
Well, you both have no shame because Danbert, like a week beforehand, he was on the radio. He's like, and there's going to be the punk news chimera, and I guess we'll be shivering. And I was like, oh, that's not right at all. You know what I mean? So I thought everybody knew what a chimera was, but nobody did. So, you know, I'm just a nerd, but what can I say? I like chimeras, you know. Next punk news show is going to be a thwomper. That's going to be August 3 at Philomoka, Summer Soiree 3, our third Summer Soiree in a row. Two headliners. One headliner is going to be World Inferno Friendship Society, and they've got some special stuff planned. Joe Jack Talcum, he's going to be there. It's either going to be him solo, it's going to be him in his acoustic band, or him in his electric solo band, which I'm really hoping is the electric solo band, because it's an amazing set. It's just awesome. I don't want to say what it is, because it's Joe Jack doing some Dead Milkmen tracks and some solo stuff, electric, with the guitar, bass, and drums. And Joe Jack is such an interesting guy, because I'm never sure if he hates me or not. Because I'll email him like, oh, Joe, you want to do this show? And he'll be like, yes, period. And I'll be like, great. I'm like, what's your guarantee? The thing with Joe Jack is he's very shy, which is amazing. Because on stage he's not, but in person he is. And I think he doesn't hate me because he keeps doing stuff with us. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure that he doesn't hate me. But the best thing about Joe, I'm like, oh, so Joe, like, are you going to be solo? Are you going to be... what are you going to be doing? And he sent me like this vague answer, basically saying, I haven't decided yet, which will be cool. So who knows what we're going to get, which kind of makes it fun. Two opening bands. One opening band is Street Vengeance, which if you are an old school punk rocker, then you know about Pure Hell. Pure Hell is an early, early Philadelphia punk band, probably the first African-American punk band ever, before Bad Brains, and an awesome kind of Stooges-influenced punk band. And so Chip from Pure Hell, he's debuting his new band, Street Vengeance. And before that is Trash Knife, who was one of the wildest and craziest punk bands in Philly, and they are awesome. We're also going to be giving away goodie bags, presents. We're going to be doing the Punk News game show, Punk's Points, where you can win prizes. It's like Jeopardy, but it's with punk trivia. We might do the Punk News dating game. Although last time we tried to do the Punk News dating game, it got kind of, like, we didn't do it because it got weird. Because a bunch of guys emailed me, and some of them emailed me, like, their sexual preferences. And I'm like, I'm not trying to get you laid. We're trying to do an innocent, fun dating game. And all the women that expressed interest kind of were hesitant. And I think because it's a lot. You know, if you're a young lady up there and there's three guys up there doing the dating game, it's a lot. So if we can find people that are comfortable doing it, we'll do it. But if not, then we won't. I'd like to do it because I think it'd be funny. And we're very PG rated. I mean, we're G rated even. But if it's too much, we won't do it. But we'll definitely do the trivia game. And it's going to be, and also it's going to be the last Punk News show for a while, because I've done six this year already. The idea I was going to do is 3 a year, but this is going to be an awesome show, and I'm super excited.
So, it's going to be the last one for a while until somebody calls you up and says, hey, will you do a show for me? And then John's like, oh, fine.
I know, exactly. But August 3, Philomoka, Tom and Hallie, come on down if you can. If you can't, that's cool. But this is going to, and $12. $12 for World Inferno and Joe Jack. This is going to be one to remember.
Nice.
And let's hit the news. All right, so a lot happening this week in the news, and I lost my list, so let me see if I can find what the first news item was. Give me a second here. So how you guys doing while I pull up the news? What's happening? What's going on?
How about that Woodstock?
How about that Woodstock, Thomas? I should have had my news ready, and now I lost it.
Woodstock reminds me.
Go ahead, Woodstock.
Well, I'm sorry. Well, no, John is having fun watching Woodstock flounder, but Woodstock to me is like that knight from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where he gets his arm cut off, and he's like, "Oh, it's just a flesh wound. It's just a flesh wound." Because this Woodstock 50 keeps getting gut punched and decapitated and everything else, and the old hippies who run are like, it's still gonna happen, and eventually they're gonna have to throw in the towel, right?
Well, speaking of fests that haven't thrown in the towel, Riot Fest 15 announced their lineup. Very, very split reactions. Some people said, oh, this is the greatest Riot Fest ever, and some people said, this is not impressive at all.
Some people say that.
Here's the headliners. Blink-182 as the main headliner, which surprised me. Slayer as one of the main headliners. Bikini Kill's one of the main headliners. Jack White's Raconteur is the main headliner. Rise Against, Flaming Lips, Jawbreaker, Ween doing all the Mollusk, Block Party, Die, Artwood, Patti Smith and her full band, Rancid, Violent Femmes, Descendants, B-52s, Taking Back Sunday, Avail, The Struts, Against Me, Coxbarer, Streetlight Manifesto, Anthrax, and a whole bunch of other bands. Hallie, greatest Riot Fest ever, worst, or somewhere in between?
I think it looks fun as fuck. I think it looks really fun. It just sort of goes back to what we were saying before with, like, if you've seen, like, a band at a festival, like, have you really seen them? And what's the difference between, like, seeing a band at a festival and seeing them at a club show? Like, a lot of these are bands that, like, I probably wouldn't make the effort to go see them at a club show, either because I'm not that big a fan or, like, I've already seen them at club shows a bazillion times. But, like, to me, this is, like, the perfect festival lineup. Like, if I get to just go and it's, like, warm weather and I get to hang out with my friends and, like, see a bunch of bands. I think for a festival, I think this is the perfect lineup. I totally wish I was going just to see, honestly, this. I might get in trouble because it's one of the less punky bands on the lineup, but just to see Block Party play Silent Alarm in its entirety, like I would totally go to this. And I went to Riot Fest last year. Had a great
kind of music is Block? What kind of music is Block Party? Like, I've heard of them, but I don't think I've ever heard of them.
Indie
like dance?
Oh. Well, but yeah, they got compared to Gang of Four a lot because it was like punky but dancey. But I think most people would just put it solidly in like the indie rock post punk category. Yeah,
there's all these bands on the list that I recognize the name, but I just don't even know what style they play or anything.
Yeah.
I'm officially too far removed from this thing because it used to be really 90% punk rock stuff, and I went to a few of them and loved it, but the last 3 or 4 years it's pretty much left me cold. I mean, there's definitely some good stuff in the middle of the lineup that I would love to see, but there's not really a band that I haven't seen, so I don't know. It's amazing to me that Slayer got elevated to headliner status because Slayer played the last year I went, and they played on a small stage, and I had very few people watching them. So, but yeah, once again, you know, you get to see your favorite band, you and 50,000 other people standing in a ginormous field.
Well, that's a big. I mean, honestly, like a band's popularity at a festival goes a lot towards marketing. Like if you put Slayer like on line three, people are like, oh, Slayer, I've seen Slayer a whole bunch of times. But if they're like Slayer playing their final show in this area, then like everyone's gonna go see Slayer.
Even and like it is fans. Being billed that way. It's a final Chicago show. But what's funny, you know, the festival thing is such a weird phenomenon anyway, because, you know, we talked about this before, John, I know we have, but, you know, we've done done a lot of these now. We talk about many things multiple times, but how, like, you know, when Motorhead played Riot Fest, it just got this huge billing, and all these sort of festival bros are all excited to see Motorhead. Meanwhile, Motorhead tours, they're playing at 2,000 seat places, but 50,000 people will go watch them at a festival. So it's just such a bizarre phenomenon. It's like the festival phenomenon is its own thing, and Riot Fest is not really a punk festival anymore. It's become a festival. And you're right, Hallie, it's fun. I mean, you know, we love, man, I remember like half buzz just kind of falling asleep on the grass and like with the Jesus and Mary chain playing behind me. It was great fun, but I don't know, my attitude kind of turned. My attitude kind of turned against it at some point. I think it was the year it rained and it got all muddy. I blame Riot Fest for the weather.
I mean, like, last year I went, and then the Sunday of the festival, I ended up basically not really even watching music. I went and hung out with friends of mine in Chicago, but that's what I want a festival to be. I want it to be something I can come and go from, and, yeah, just eat crappy food and hang out in the city that I'm in, and then just, like just get to see New Order. Which is like last year, New Order in a field with a bazillion other people. Well, would I rather see New Order in a club? Like, definitely. Yeah. But I don't know. It was good. It was a really good time.
Yeah, I get, you know, I definitely get that. I could go through. I mean, I saw Blondie there. I never have seen them in a smaller place. I saw Elvis Costello. I never saw him in a small place. So I get that. I saw the Stooges, Replacements. But I don't, like I said, my attitude turned at some point.
I'm surprised Patti Smith is lying. I would think that he would pitch Patti Smith as top line because she doesn't really tour all that much, and it's like Patti Smith, and like everybody respects Patti Smith.
She played the last year I went. It was all right. I mean, it wasn't amazing. I mean, she's an older woman now, and I'm not she's just, you know, that at that age the show is not as dynamic maybe as it could be, but she has a lot of stuff to say.
From both a financial and an artistic perspective, does Blink 182 deserve to be like spot number one?
Not in my heart and mind, but I think in the heart and mind of like the kind of people that are like super excited to go to this Riot Fest. Like, yeah, I think they're like totally stoked on that.
Well, let's talk about Blink 182.
Who sold the most records, John, of all anybody on that bill?
Let's take a look here. I mean, but is that a fair thing? I mean, probably Blink 182, but that's only because they were popular in the 90s.
I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to, isn't it? I mean, isn't that kind of what it comes down to?
Honestly, Tom, maybe Slayer sold more records. You know, I mean,
Slayer doesn't have a platinum album.
Or how about Rancid?
No, I think Blink 182. I think Enema of the State sold like 8 million copies or something.
B-52s have sold a lot of records.
See, Big Thing was probably platinum, but once again, man, I'm going to be Googling the shit out of this now.
What were you saying, Hallie?
I was really surprised to see Rancid as far down on that lineup as it was. That was surprising to me.
Hallie, do you think Rancid is doing too many? I mean, they're on like every festival, so maybe
that's what I'm gonna say. It's overexposure,
and that may explain why they're like, you know, 11 lines down in the list of bands playing this festival.
It's such a bummer when the bands that you know are like super important bands are in the middle of the bill, and then you get like a Blink 182 at the top. It never ceases to bum me out. And we talked about that too last week, how much of a bummer it is when you have to watch the Damned play before Pennywise. Not trying to throw shade on Pennywise as much as just, you know, it all comes down to sales and popularity instead of influence.
I'm not a Pennywise fan, I'm not a hater either, but if them playing gets the Damned there, then I'm all for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose.
Speaking of Blink 182, here's something that I do think is interesting with regards to Blink 182. Colleen Green, I would say she's a, I'll say, alt pop provocateur. She's going to release a track-by-track cover of Blink-182's Dude Ranch. It's an interesting maneuver by her. Her last release was kind of like an EP that she kind of transmuted into a full length. I think it's just called Colleen Green. But her last album was one before that on Hardly Art, and that album was really, really good. Colleen Green actually played the Punk News Holiday Spectacular with Cassie Ramone and Joe Jack Talco, and that was awesome. I don't care about Blink-182. Actually, I kind of am a hater, honestly. I don't get Blink-182. It sounds so poppy to me. I don't hear any punk in it at all. And it just sounds like radio rock to me. But here's what's interesting about this is I love Pink Floyd. I'm a big Pink Floyd fan. I have three albums of bands covering Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon in full. There's Flaming Lips doing it. There's London Symphonic Orchestra with Alice Cooper and Rick Wakeman. And then there's the reggae guys. It's a reggae group that does like reggae covers of albums. I can't remember the name of it, but it's actually they're all good. But every time I listen to like you know Flaming Lips cover Dark Side of the Moon, I'm like, well, why don't I just listen to the real Dark Side of the Moon? You know, this mm-hmm. I find to be particularly interesting because I don't care about Blink 182 at all, but I like Colleen Green a lot, so I'm very excited for this. Maybe I'll become a fan. And what if how about Hallie? What if I love this? Like I don't like Blink 182, but what if I love this recording? What does that mean?
Well, no, I mean, it's going to be interesting because I'm with you. Well, look, I'm not totally in the same boat as you because I used to love Blink 182 a lot, but I just listened to it a lot when I was younger and don't particularly care anymore. I also have gotten kind of like sour on like covers. Like, I don't know if it's with this Weezer stuff. Like, I don't want to hear Weezer just doing covers of songs that like the original.
Like straight up.
It's made me just like hate covers when like covers are a thing I traditionally think are
kind
of
cool. Is there anything that Weezer can't destroy?
Yeah, so I was like very skeptical about this, and then I thought, but I do really love Colleen Green. I think she's awesome. And so then I did a little bit of rooting around, and I found this cover that she actually already covered a Blink 182 song years ago. She covered Eminem's, and I hadn't heard it. I listened to that today, and it's so good. I have no interest in like going back and listening to that old Blink 182 song, but like this Colleen Green cover, I would listen to it like 10 times in a row. So I don't know, now I'm actually kind of excited about this album because like different from the Weezer covers, she does kind of put her own spin on stuff, and I think she could. I don't know. I think she could really do something. I mean, those are. It's like you said. They're pop songs. They're pop songs. They have good melodies, and she's just super hip and stylish and talented. And I think she could actually make something really cool of that album, if she puts her mind to it.
I don't know who she is.
She's cool. How about this question then? So her last full album was about 3 or 4 years ago. I can't remember the name of it, but it was really... Oh, I Don't Want to Grow Up? Was that what it was called?
I think I Want to Grow Up.
That's it.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, that was a cool, great album, right?
It's an awesome album, yeah.
I like that part. Like, it's like things that... I want to do things that are bad for me or whatever. Like, part one and part two. And it's got like a breakdown in the second half. But here's the thing is, she's put out a couple of obscure releases. Do you think she'll never put out an album again? And she's like, well, maybe I'll just do artistically daring things instead of just a traditional album. You know what I mean? And here's the question, Hallie. Is this artistically daring or is this a safe maneuver? I say it's artistically daring for two reasons. A, it's unexpected and weird. And B, the cover art is so MS Paint. It's like an artistic statement. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think we'll find out when we hear, you know, like, we'll know when we hear it if it's an artistic statement, you know? It's like she's got to actually, like bring the heat and do something cool with it. I think she definitely could.
Fair enough.
We'll never really know until Weezer does Take Off Your Pants and Jacket.
Oh, man.
I news update here. I've been on the Google while you guys were talking about this woman that I don't know who she is. Blink-182, 13 million total albums sold. Slayer, 5 million. Rancid, 4 million.
Wow. How about Big Moose Man Hollington?
How many cassettes? How many X-rated child-friendly cassettes as
he We'll sold. Get to him in a second, but let's hit a little bit of sad news that has a lot of interesting twists to it. Bushwick Bill of the Ghetto Boys has passed away. He was 52. Of course, the Ghetto Boys were architects of gangster rap, but also, interestingly, about Bushwick Bill, Bushwick Bill is one of the first, maybe even the first, MCs to explicitly deal with mental health issues in hip-hop. The famous track is My Mind's Playing Tricks on Me, but he dealt with it before, going back to his first release, which was on the second Ghetto Boys album, I think. Bushwick Bill kind of had a tough road in that, like, he was a little person, I'm just being true here. When you're a little person, people treat you differently, and your life is probably harder than it is if you weren't a little person. And I know Bushwick Bill rapped about this issue in a lot of his songs, that's a very hard thing to get over, and you never really get over it, to the point where he actually tried to commit suicide in 1990, and he didn't kill himself, thankfully, and he accidentally shot out his eye, and he rapped about that. He gets over that. He actually became a Christian rapper, which a lot of people insulted him for, but I'm like, listen, man, if that's what Bushwick Bill has to do to be happy, then I'm all for it, because he's a very talented MC. And so he was doing all right for a while, but then he got cancer at like 51 and then died not that long after that, 52. So talk about a hard life, man. Guy was born a little person, had severe mental health issues, got over it, and then had cancer and passed away. I'm not trying to be Debbie Down here, but it is sad. But on the other hand, it is sad. But he was an extremely talented person, and it brings up the issue, if you will, is Ghetto Boys had a lot of very violent lyrics. And how do you treat an artist that had very violent and provocative lyrics after they pass away? Do you sweep that under the rug? Do you say, yeah, it's cool that he did that? What I'm saying is a lot of the Ghetto Boys lyrics in 1988, 1989 would not fly in 2019. And so how do we deal with that, if you will?
I like read a quote from him that I thought was so interesting, because he was just he was saying, you know, that, and you hear this defense a lot, like that people want to hear music and lyrics that reflect what their actual life is like. And for, I think, a lot of the people that were listening to Ghetto Boys, they were like, yeah, I recognize this. This is my life. He made like an interesting point about I'm not going to be able to rephrase it in an interesting way, but trust me, it was an interesting quote about, you know, like the very same people that are like starting violent wars around the globe being the very same people that would have a problem with lyrics like this and would want to like sort of, censor them. And I don't know. It was, like I said, he said it more intelligently than I am. I'm paraphrasing right now, but I don't know. I thought it was interesting and worth talking about. Violence happens, and that is, I don't know. I'm not being articulate about it, but yeah, he seemed to have some really smart thoughts about those lyrics that I was interested to read about.
What do you think, John? I think you were probably in the same boat. I don't think artists should be limited by anything.
No,
I don't like. I don't like it when people today try to judge things by today's standards. I think that we have to look at individuals for what they were. And you know, at the end of the day, the actions define a man more than the lyrics. And I don't think we should be artistically censored at all. If people don't want to listen to it, you know, if it's too violent or whatever, then skip it. But I don't know. I don't hold it against the artist.
Like Howie said, Bushwick Bill was a very articulate person, and honestly, like a great. He had a very unique sounding voice, which is always a plus for me in hip hop. He's a great rapper. He's on some classic albums. You know, We Can't Be Stopped, Up on Another Level. All those early Ghetto Boys albums. I mean, yeah, they're offensive, but I don't think that's the end of the world for me. But just a great group and a lot of interesting. I think they don't quite get enough credit for the strides they made in lyrical content with regard to mental health, but also you know, seeing the world through their perspective, which I think was fairly new at the time. Let's play a song, and then we'll come back and we'll hit the second half of our news. Who's got a tune, Tom or Hallie? Hallie or Tom, what tune are we playing?
I had one. What did they do with it? Now I sort of want to hear the Gatto Boys.
Do you have one, Tom? I have one.
Hallie, kick it off.
No, you go ahead. I do, but I'll find it for next time. Yeah, you go ahead. I'll get the last one.
Yeah, so there's this band, Personal Best, from the UK, that I think are totally great. And their new album comes out, it comes out really soon. Oh, yeah, look, it's out in like 3 days. It comes out on the 14th. So this is Personal Best. The single that they released off the new album is called Baby. And I think it's like hooky as hell. And it's off this new album. What You At is going to be out in just a few days. And I'm like, really, if the singles are representative of the rest of the album, it's going to be like on my like top albums of the year list.
I'm getting better. I'm looking after some things like my brain, but I'm getting worse. I'm looking after your heart. I said I'd never go. Did you know that I'd change? Did you know that I'd become of a baby? Cause I have to say maybe, maybe I'll go, or maybe I'll stay when you're looking at me that way.
Cool. Let's talk about something that might be cool or might definitely not be cool. Let's talk about Big Moose Man Holington. We've talked about him on the podcast a couple of times before. Big Moose Man Holington, here's what he does. He does Brony Core, Ramones Core, or Brony Ramones Core. Say, what's a Brony? A Brony is a grown person, usually male, I believe, that's into My Little Ponies. Then, if you've watched the My Little
Ponies, I think the bro stands for bro. I think it is only males.
If you've watched the My Little Pony documentary with John Delancey of Star Trek The Next Generation, then you know there's also, quote, bad bronies. Bad bronies are guys that whack off to My Little Ponies. Big Moose Man Holington, he put out an album about 4 or 5 months ago that I was fascinated by, because the first half is just him doing Ramones core tracks about My Little Pony, which is kind of funny, but the recordings are like really bad sounding. Like, it's hard to make a bad sounding recording in 2018 or 19, but he found a way. He found a way to make the recording sound terrible. And the second half gets like really disturbing. Like, there's a song called Pull My Mane. There's a song, it gets whacked out. It gets like really bad. And what I didn't know, and what I still don't know, is this a guy portraying a character? Is the guy fundamentally a normal person, and he's just doing shock humor, kind of like Green Jelly or like Guar, you know? Or is this someone that's truly disturbed, that really is a bad brony, and he's just singing about things that he likes? You know what I mean? And so I didn't know.
It's all about those records. It's all about this record set.
He emailed me because I wrote a review, and I said, this is not a good record. This record is bad, but I'm fascinated in the way that people are fascinated by Daniel Johnson, and that is Daniel Johnson being incompetent, or is he such a different person? This is how his music comes out. And I said, with Big Moose Man Holington, I said, I don't know if this guy is an actor or he truly is a perverted individual. Well, Big Moose emailed me, and he thanked me over and over and over for my review, and he said, let me send you a t-shirt. And I didn't want to give him my home address. So I gave him a P.O. box and I now have a Big Moose Man Holington t-shirt. And so anyway,
apparently he struggles to get reviews in legitimate publications, huh?
So anyway, he just put out a new video called 53rd and Heard. And watching this video, my questions still aren't answered. The video is fairly gross. I mean, it's got guys in like S&M masks and like a lot of blood, and it's like in movies where they have a serial killer and a serial killer like makes a movie, like the movie looks weird and whacked out. This is how this looks. So either this guy is a fantastic editor and actor, or he really is whacked out. So here's the question: Big Moose Man Holington, gross fun or truly unwholesome activities? Because I don't know.
John, how could we know, John? If you don't know, then who knows? You wear the t-shirt.
Honestly, I'm leaning towards truly unwholesome. This video kind of made me feel uneasy.
This is so bizarre. I mean, this is the kind of thing that makes me not want to live in this world anymore, John. I'm not amused by it. I'm just sort of disgusted by it.
I am disgusted by it. I'm fascinated.
I mean, I'm fascinated by serial killers. This is disgusting.
This just goes too far for you.
Well, what is wrong with people? I mean, can't you just have a normal, wacky hang up like the rest of us? You have to dress like a freaking pony and get turned on by stuffed animals. I don't know. Maybe I don't get it, but I don't know.
Hallie, did you watch this video?
I couldn't be interested in the video or the song. I just couldn't make myself be interested at all. That being said, I got super into the concept of a brony, and I like went down a real rabbit hole learning all about bronies, and I came out the other side to thinking that bronies are pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I can bear to do the necessary research to come to that conclusion.
Well, listen.
Maybe I doth protest too much. Maybe I'm too afraid that I'll get into the brony lifestyle.
See, I want to review the new Big Moose Man Holington album because I'm not sure.
I want you to.
But here's the problem. It's a few years. I mean, we've had this problem happen a couple of times on Punk News, and this is the classic example. A few years ago, a guy on the podcast, we would talk about the transplants, and we would like make fun of them, and this guy would email us, and he'd be like transplants are the best band ever. I got so mad that you guys were trash talking the transplants, I went into my bathroom and screamed for a half hour, and then we were like, ha, the transplants suck, man, they suck. And like next week, he's like, I can't believe you're still talking bad about the transplants. They're the greatest band ever. They're better than the Beatles. I hate you. I got so mad that I punched three holes on my wall, and we thought he was joking.
I don't remember the violence of the screaming, but I do remember being a vehement defender.
That's why we stopped, because of God. Hallie, check this out. It was real. It was real. Like we thought he was joking. He was serious in that. Like, he was screaming in his bathroom and punching holes in his wall.
I mean, I remember this. I remember this, John. I feel like you're adding layers to it, but
The reason we stopped, and I hope it's safe to talk about it now, it's been about 5 or 6 years, is because
we're gonna get another letter.
He sent me this really, 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 really long email that was not a joke. You know what I mean? And we're like, oh man, like we're making fun of the transplants. We don't actually mean to cause this guy severe mental distress. So we totally backed off.
If you're still listening, dude, talk hands in the air.
And so.
That was one of the early songs.
I'd like to keep investigating this Big Moose Man Holding thing because it's so weird. But if he's serious, I don't think I want to.
John, what would be worse? Maybe you're offending the one true Big Moose Man Holington fan right now, and he's currently in the bathroom punching holes.
Well, speaking of people punching holes in their
business, I mean, that would just be bad luck.
Speaking of people punching holes in their business plan, iTunes is no more. Well, it's kind of no more, but it's sort of no more, but it's sort of still around. Basically, new Apple products will no longer have iTunes. The iTunes functions will be spread across 3 different apps. If you have iTunes on a non-Mac, that'll still work. And if you have iTunes on an old computer, it'll still work that way. And you can still buy stuff off iTunes. However, iTunes is being phased out, and people won't be able to use it anymore. Which surprised me is that I thought everyone loved iTunes, but it turns out everyone hates iTunes. I actually liked iTunes when it first came out, but they kept changing it and making it crappier and crappier. And so I actually stopped using it about 3 or 4 years ago, but I thought everyone else still used it. But apparently, like, no one uses iTunes anymore, and everyone hates it.
I stopped using it. I found it, like, completely difficult to use, and it was interesting because I feel like when they started it, Steve Jobs, like, bragged about how consumers would own the digital rights to their own music, and he thought that consumers wanted to do that, you know, comparing their platform to Napster, where people didn't own the digital rights to their own music. But I felt like iTunes was so bossy with the music. It was like I could only share it with this many people. If I bought a cassette or a CD, I could copy that cassette or that CD for my friends as many times as I wanted. I bought it. It belonged to me. I could do whatever.
Not legally, but yeah, you could do that.
You know, like, so I don't know. Like, and then I don't know. I just sort of felt like I was never good at, like, backing things up on a million hard drives. And I sort of, like, I'd buy music and then get a new computer and my music would disappear. And it seemed like they should have found maybe a middle ground between, like, their platform and Spotify. Like, Spotify is like, you can access it any time, but you don't own it. I do like paying for my music. I prefer to pay for my music, but I would get annoyed when I'd get a new computer and I'd be like, Apple knows I paid for that album. Why won't it just give me my album again? I don't know. I feel like there's probably some middle ground where they could have, I don't know. Yeah. Like, allowed you to pay for the things, but not been so bossy about how many times you can copy it or how many computers you can have it on. And then, I don't know, keep it in a cloud for me. Let me listen to it whenever I want. You know that I paid for it. I know that you know that I paid for it. Now, just give me access to it when I want access to it. I don't know. It seemed like it just got outdated really quickly. You know, it suddenly just seemed like this clunky old dinosaur. And I was even having trouble using the dumb iTunes on my computer, which maybe just makes me sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but I'd be trying to just figure out how to get songs onto my phone, and I couldn't figure it out anymore. I got annoyed with it, so I stopped using it. So I'm in the same boat as you, John, and I think if we are, that's probably everybody. Everyone just probably just stopped using it like 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, I think everybody originally got into it because for like in the like Christmas of 2010, the iTunes gift card was the hot gift, and everybody got an iTunes gift card. But I went through a couple of iPod Touches, which I loved. I loved my iPod Touches. As a kid who grew up listening to cassette Walkmans, I mean, it was pretty much the same thing, except for I didn't have to carry around this stupid case with 24 tapes in it. I had like 5,000 songs in it. And I ran everything through iTunes, but I rarely bought anything through iTunes unless I had a gift card or something. But I didn't mind like buying my Bandcamp stuff and formatting it through iTunes and putting it in my iPod. But now my iPods are all dead, and I don't see buying another one because they're still incredibly expensive to buy a good one. So Yeah, I'm probably not going to miss iTunes Store or iTunes in general very much. But I mean, I had a good run with them. We had a nice run.
Yeah, I miss that era of it. And the way it is now, I'm not going to miss that at all. Good riddance.
But I'm not a streamer. I'm not a streamer, honestly. And since I don't use my iPod anymore, I mean, I've officially become the old fuddy-duddy who really very, very rarely listens to anything that's not physical. So I'm kind of reverted back to the caveman, my caveman ancestors.
Well, get this. They say now that the downloads make up a smaller percentage of recording sales than physical albums.
But yeah. I think that's dollars, not quantity, right?
Interesting question. Either way, I find it interesting.
But like, I mean, album sales, we've talked about this.
Download anything. That people just don't download. They prefer to buy a physical album than to download.
Adam and I have talked about this, how we have all these stupid little cards that keep falling out with the free download code on it. We never.
I always use them, Tom. I always use them.
I just eventually you just throw it away.
I try to keep
all the stuff in the record, you know, but yeah. Well, and you know, I used to, you know, for reviewing purposes, I always had everything in my iPod, you know. I threw it in my iPod and I'd wear it around at work or whatever and I'd listen to it. And I'm in a transitional period right now. I'm not sure. I don't really like listening to music on my phone. So I'm just, I don't know. I've gone through a lot of stages in my music listening. You know, I started out buying LPs from like RCA Record Club or whatever, and then I went to cassettes, and then I bought like 5,000 CDs and always buy vinyl records in there, and now I'm buying more vinyl records again. So it's just, you know, it's just another, you know, wave in my music buying habits, I guess.
Mm-hmm. What annoys me about Apple, and I'm going to be doom and gloom here, is that, and I saw this coming a while ago to pat myself on the back, is originally,
John hates Steve Jobs.
I do hate Steve. Well, I don't like Steve Jobs, that's for sure. Tom, you remember when I was saying how much I hate Steve Jobs? And someone was like, shows me, you know, he died 10 years ago. And I was like, well, I know that. I mean, that's part of the joke. And like Apple used to make a product that worked for me, you know. Now Apple is trying to make me work for the product. My biggest example is the new Apple laptops. They don't have a CD drive and they don't have a USB port. It's like, well, that's what I want as the consumer. So why are you making me adhere to use? So, I mean, quite, you know, cyberpunkishly, they're making us, you know, servants to the technology, where the technology must be servants to us. And so I'm not down with that. So listen, man, my laptop is dying, so I got to figure out what I'm going to do. But, I mean, I think I'm just doing, like, if the product isn't doing what I wanted to do, then I think I'm just not going to use the product and I'm not going to adapt to it. And I see people do this all the time. I got a couple of techie friends who are like, oh, have you seen the new iPhone? It's like, oh, I got to learn how to do this. I got to learn how to. It's like my phone, my iPod, my computer is my servant. So if it's not conforming to what I wanted to do, then I get a new servant. You know what I mean? So anyways, honestly, I think that's what everyone needs to do, because it's no secret that people are getting more and more ensnared in technology. We can talk about that another. I think people are becoming dumber because of technology. You know, a lot of my friends only like text in memes now. It's like you can't make your own jokes now. You have to use someone else's jokes. You know, with the directions, I find that if you use the directions, you don't remember how you got there. But if you use MapQuest or a map, you do remember how you got there. So I don't use the directions unless I have to, which honestly, when you need to use it, is very useful. But I don't want to rely on it, you know. So I think people are becoming dumber because of technology. And I think, not to be Mr. Paranoid, but I think that's the exact plan of these mega tech corporations, to make you their servant, not vice versa. And so I think, you know, it might do well to keep that in the back of your mind.
Here's John, did you read 451 Fahrenheit?
I did, Thomas.
So
you mean Fahrenheit 451, Thomas?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
By Joseph Heller, or do you mean the bootleg version written by? But
I had the Italian misprint version. I bought it directly from the author in 1958. No, but in that book, I read it relatively recently. You know, my high school age kids are reading all these books, and I didn't read any of my required reading in high school, so I'm sort of like making amends to the teachers that are probably dead now by reading some of this stuff. And in that, the wife of the fireman in that lived in the apartment, and the whole entire apartment was like, the better you did in society, the more walls of TV you got in your apartment, essentially. So eventually you were just totally encapsulated by walls of television, and the reality started to blur as far as what was real and what wasn't because you spent all your time in front of these television. And I really think the author had it right, but the thing he missed was the televisions aren't getting bigger. The televisions are getting smaller because our phones have kind of become that sort of dystopian nightmare that he envisioned, honestly.
Yeah.
And
I'm as guilty of it as anybody, dude. I'm terrible.
I mean, and not to draw this out and not to be able to end with a happy story, but I've told my Subway story.
We have to talk about at least one classic novel a week.
Yeah, I mean, like now that everyone's got the phones, like people get weirded out if you just start talking to them. Like I was in the Subway, not the Subway, the sandwich shop, and there was
this might be a John problem, but
it might be me. It might not be the phone. And there was an old lady next to me, and she was taking a long time, and people were getting like grumpy. And I'm thinking, this is an old lady. Stop being jackasses. So I said to the person next to me, like, oh, I didn't know you could get a BLT at Subway. I did know that, but I was just trying to, like, make conversation to, like, get people's attention changed while this old lady took care of whatever she needed to take care of. And the person, like, looked at me like I was insane. Like they're like, why are you talking to me for? Of course, then again, maybe it wasn't the phone. Maybe it was me, you know, saying, you know.
You were giving off a heavy. You were getting off a heavy creep vibe that day, John.
I did have my Big Moose Man Holington t-shirt on. Let's wrap this up. Amon the Sniffers, they've put out their debut album following a string of three or technically four singles. The new album is called, I think it's just called Amon the Sniffers. And one of the singles is a track called Gacked on Anger. I absolutely loved the first three Amon the Sniffers singles. The first one was their debut. Second one was called Giddy Up, I believe. And the third was Cup of Destiny / Some Mutts Can't Be Muzzled. And I love those singles. I mean, especially Some Mutts Can't Be Muzzled, I think was one of the greatest songs of the year. The new album, I got it. I didn't love it at first. I thought, wow, this is not as hooky as the singles. I listened to it a second time. I was like really disappointed. I listened to it a third time, and it hit. I'm like, oh, my God, this record is great. I think they made it more intense and less hooky. And I think that's kind of a good thing, because if every single song is super hooky, then the album wears out faster. You listen to it 10 times, you're like, all right, I get it. I get the hooks. But because it's a little bit more chaos, a little bit more speed, I think this album is a keeper and will be around for a long time. Meanwhile, Amy, the singer, she just has so much like, her viewpoint is so unique. She's got a unique personality. She just exudes something. She exudes a perspective I haven't heard in punk before, or haven't heard that many times before in punk, and I think this track is super cool. Did you guys? So here's the question. And a lot of people I spoke to, some people liked the album, some people didn't like it because it wasn't as hooky as the single. So the question is for you, for Hallie and Tom. Did you guys like this track in that it was hardcore, fierce, and explosive, or was it too much noise, not enough melody for you? Or what's your stance on the song, if you will?
I love the song. That being said, I don't really know this band, so I didn't, you know, like, I didn't have anything to compare it to, but, like, this made me, I mean, I think the song's awesome. It made me want to, like, check out everything else they put out.
Isn't her voice, like, so, like, they're Australian, isn't her voice, like, just, like, so fantastic, just the way she sounds?
Yeah.
I haven't listened to it, John.
Thomas, you're letting us down. Well, Tom, then play a song and
start up. Several years ago, I like looked at all the stories, listened to all the music, watched all the videos, and John and Adam openly mocked me for my preparation. I don't prepare at all, and John still attempts to openly mock me. So it's just a lose-lose situation with these guys.
Now I'm the nerd that does all the preparation. Are you guys mocking me behind my back?
Wait till you're like 100 episodes. Then you'll be like, "Ah, screw it! I don't have time for this crap." No, my personal goal. I know you and I have never been on at the same time. Is usually to try to derail the show from whatever the boring news of the week is by bringing up, you know, irrelevant and unrelated things. Sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't. But it is what it is. It's my turn to play a song, Jeff.
It's your turn to play a song, Tom.
All right, I'm going to play a song. This is an odd one that Liverpool Neil sent me. me, and it's kind of an obscure band. They kind of have like a weird, I think late 70s. They have a weird kind of almost semi rockabilly sound. But John, you're the big punk trivia guy. They're called Catwax Axe Company. Are you familiar with Catwax Axe Company? I guess it's pretty obscure. Single.
Catwax Axe Company. I can't say that I am. I'm not. No.
Oh, we've stumped John Gentile. But this song is called Wax Walk. Check it out. It's pretty cool. Catwax Axe Company. And the name of the song is Wax Walk.
And that was Catwax Axe Company doing Wax Walk. And
hey, it's like a tongue twister.
Well, Tom, listen, thanks for being on the show, even though you were ill-prepared. And honestly, Tom, I was surprised that you were anti-Big Moose Man Holington. I thought you were pro the chaos and concern that this gentleman raises.
There's something so insidious to me about this freaking brony thing. I don't know, dude.
You think Big Moose is unwholesome is what you're saying?
I don't even know about that. It's just, I find it so... I just like, what kind of a world is this we live in now? I mean, I know there's always been like, you know, axe murderers and streakers and all kinds of weirdos, but for some reason I could deal with that.
Tom, you equate streaking with the same level of severity as axe murdering?
Well, no, I'm just making a few examples.
Hallie Bullitt, final word, axe murder and streaking. What would you rather see in the newspaper?
Streaking is so funny. I want to see streaking in the newspaper every day. There's something so hilarious to me about streaking.
Actually, final word. I agree, streaking is hilarious. What is hilarious? Like, why is streaking hilarious? Because it's never not funny.
It's never not funny.
It's the funniest part is, like, when it's at a ball game and the cops are, like, trying to tackle. It's always a naked man, right? I mean, well, 95% of the time. They're, like, trying to tackle this dude without touching his junk. I find that part of it pretty hilarious.
And we'll see you next week.